It's time to awaken to your ultimate potential.
Always something to learn.
The more real and truthful you can get with yourself, the happier you're going to be.
Nothing happens in the comfort zone.
There are no set rules on how to attain success and to feel fulfilled.
Each one of us are born with a purpose.
For me, I knew there was something bigger.
You don't conquer the mountain, you conquer yourself.
I'm Crystal Bauer, wellness expert and entrepreneur. Each week, I'm speaking with incredible individuals, inspiring you to awaken your ultimate potential. Welcome to the Live Greatly podcast. Now for a quick disclaimer, this episode and all the information provided is for informational and educational purposes only. It is not medical advice or treatment recommendations. Always seek the guidance of your healthcare provider or physician for any recommendations specific to you and any questions about your health or any medical conditions.
And they found that those people who had more virus killer, natural virus killer in the bloodstream, who had better microbiome that was linked to that, were also having green or black tea or eating seafood.
I'm so excited about today's episode. If you're someone who's struggling with your health, if you have low energy, or if you just want to live a more vibrant and healthy life, you are going to learn a ton of valuable tips in this episode with Dr. William Lee. Dr. Lee is an internationally renowned physician, scientist, and author of the New York Times bestseller, Eat to Beat Disease. He has a phenomenal TED Talk, Can We Eat to Starve Cancer?, which has had more than 11 million views. He's been on Good Morning America, CNN, Dr. Oz, and we are going to talk about foods to increase, his top five foods that he recommends eating more of, are there really superfoods, how to eat to enjoy your life, and so many more valuable topics. Make sure you stay tuned till the end because Dr. Lee is going to give his insight into butter, is it good or bad, and gluten. So I'm so very excited. Let's welcome Dr. William Lee to the show.
So Dr. Lee, thanks so much for being here. I'm so excited to talk about all different types of things, particularly nutrition with you today. So welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Crystal. It's a real pleasure to be here.
Yeah, well, you know, we both have a passion for healthy, nutritious food. And I was hoping that you could share with the audience a little bit about your book. And then I want to dive into details about it because I have so many questions as far as nutrition and eating to optimize, you know, mental health and physical health.
Yeah, well, listen, give you a little bit of background. I'm a physician. I'm an internal medicine doctor, and I'm also a vascular biologist. I'm a researcher. And so that kind of connection between research and medicine kind of puts me on the front lines, a different kind of front lines than we normally talk about, but sort of like, where is medicine and health research actually going? And while most people, including myself, I've done this before, sort of strike out into the area of biotech and like super exciting technological therapies. And I've been involved with developing new exciting treatments for cancer and other diseases. The reality is that I looked back at my own medical practice and realized that although I've been armed to tell so much to patients about their disease and the treatments and the specialties that they should specialists to go see, the reality is that my patients were interested in what they could do for themselves, what they should eat. And I realized that I was never taught that in medical school. There was no postgraduate training that I knew of. And as I was going through training to arm me with that information, and I thought that was wrong, you know, that we only knew about drugs and procedures, and we didn't really know anything about the thing that we all have to do three times a day. And if you think about it, we do go to the doctor's office and hopefully not to the hospital, but health care is actually what we do for ourselves between visits to the doctor. And that's this empty toolbox I thought I needed to fill. So I went back to my own passion, which is on food. I grew up really with an appreciation of foods from different cultures, and I love to cook myself. And I even spent a gap year living in the Mediterranean long before people were knew anything about the Mediterranean diet. And I went back and I put my research hat on to figure out how does food work as medicine.
I love that. And I totally resonate with what you're saying about you not being taught about how to really eat to optimize your health, because I felt the same way. you know, throughout my training as a PA, and you're taught about, you know, disease management, you know, set like preventative procedures, but maybe there's that like trying healthy statement, but like, what does that really mean? So that's what really pushed me to learn more. And, you know, with integrative medicine, what I was taught and what Dr. Andrew Weil is a big proponent of, and what I personally like to do is follow more of a plant-based diet. And that's when I feel my best, when I'm eating a lot of plants. I did vegan for a little while. I missed meat with that after a period of time. Then I went to pescatarian, and now it's kind of like, I don't eat red meat, but I'll throw in a little organic chicken, organic turkey, that sort of thing here and there. But what kind of diet do you recommend for the general public? I think it can be really individualized, but do you have any just general recommendations that people can use to eat to live vibrantly?
You know, I think the way you asked that is exactly the right way that people should ask the same question to themselves, which is that what can I eat to live? And living means that you really enjoy your life, right? I'll tell you what my mantra is. I'll give you the punchline for what I really believe in right up front, which is that you should love your food to love your health. And it's not the usual way where you think about, well, if I want to be healthy, I've got to cut out everything that I love. I'm a big believer in literally aligning what your priorities and goals are. And people should really enjoy their lives. But the good news is that really when it comes to food and health, you can actually eat a lot of foods that people already love and enjoy that are present in many types of genres of cooking, ethnicities, cultures. And I start, by the way, before I talk to any patients about food and health, I actually start with how they relate to food individually. So I think food tells us something about who we as individuals are. It tells us about our childhood, our families, our culture, our communities. Everybody relates to something when it comes to food and where they came from, no matter what your cultural background or ethnic background actually is. And that's a good starting point because people can relate to the food that they kind of grew up with, that they are surrounded by, and that largely shapes their sensibilities towards foods. So I guess what I'm saying is that it's going to be something a little bit different for everyone. That said, there are some really broad patterns that work. And we know this works from all the research that's been done. Whole plant-based foods tend to be better for you. Eat more plants than animals. You're probably going to be healthier. Your body's going to health. Thank you for it. And part of the reason is that Mother Nature put into plants all of these natural chemicals that, in fact, serve the plant first. So a lot of these natural bioactive chemicals that are in plants that are good for our bodies actually were originally in the plant to defend the plant, either to help them defend against pests, help them grow hardy in an environment, or help them gain reproductive advantage, right? So, you know, the color, the pigments that are in, you know, bright colored fruits and vegetables, those all things that attract insects or repel for pollination, they repel insects. And when man or humans actually started to pick up any plant-based foods, suddenly those plant molecules, chemicals, had another job description, which is that they started to interact with our human cells. So I always tell people when it comes to food and health, it's not just about the food. There's no such thing as a superfood or a super supplement. That's just marketing. And, you know, companies that are selling their stuff are going to market it that way. But for everyone else who's out there trying to figure out what's the right approach that they can take, what I always say is that when it comes to food and health, it's not only about the food, it's about how your body responds to what you put inside it. That's really important to understand.
Yes, and that is something I think that there's more and more testing coming out, but I haven't seen anything that's been like a gold standard for that. And there's a lot of questioning about the accuracy of the different testing as far as how your body, food sensitivity tests. I know when I was practicing in functional medicine, it's like they're not very accurate. And now there's more tests coming out where you can check to see what foods, you know, based on stool samples, some blood samples, you know, what foods to eat, what foods to avoid, what probiotics are recommended. What are your thoughts on that as far as avoid it, go for it? What do you think?
Yeah, you know, I think what you're talking about is this whole area that is sometimes called precision nutrition.
Yeah.
Where we can actually do breath tests, test, swab, whatever it is to collect some samples, send it off to the lab and come back with an answer. And, you know, I think that, you know, when we get to Mars and start to colonize and or settle on another planet, we'll be forced to have something like that to maintain our health. We're not there yet. And I think that's a lot of the technologies that are out there are, you know, kind of like they're good efforts to try to get us there. But I myself feel that, number one, how we feel inside is our own most sensitive barometer, how we're actually doing. If your gut's queasy, if you're gassy or feeling bloated, your gut microbiome is probably not at optimal. You know, if you're feeling sluggish and tired, that's probably a reflection of your inflammatory state or your circulation. And so what I write about in my book, Eat to Beat Disease, is that, you know, our body is really defended by health defense systems. And the question isn't why we get sick, you know, why do we get autoimmune disease? Why do we get Hashimoto's? Why do we get dementia? Like, those are important research questions. I think a more fascinating question, important question, is to say, why don't we get sick more often? If you think about it, we're surrounded by viruses. We're young, and most young people don't get cancer. If you have a regular car and you're out at the filling station and you put that pump in, I always ask, do you stand upwind or downwind of the gas? And people go, well, why do you ask that question? I'm saying, well, because if you can smell the fumes, you're standing downwind, and those fumes, solvents, are actually damaging the DNA in your lung. So how come you don't get lung cancer the next week, right? So these are really profound questions. I sometimes sort of take a counterintuitive approach, and I ask the question, why don't we get sick more often? And the answer is actually that we are born with hardwired health defenses that start in our womb, we develop when we're in our mom's womb, and actually are firing in all cylinders until our very last breath. And these health defenses actually keep us from getting sick. They repel disease. They clean up problems, lower inflammation, improve our circulation, regenerate our organs. They keep our gut healthy. They neutralize environmental damage that could actually harm our DNA, slow down our cells' aging process. And the great news is that the foods that we eat can actually activate, boost these health defenses. So what I really think the best way to nurture our own individual health is, we don't have the perfect little test yet. You know, you can't pee in a cup or, you know, have a pregnancy strip that'll tell us how to do this. But we can actually eat foods that we really enjoy, so it doesn't become too clinical. We can pick foods from a long list of things that are healthy for us, prepare them in the most natural, harmonious way. What's good for the body tends to be good for the nature. Enjoy them, not too much, and not even not too often. Like, diversity is really great, and activate our health defenses.
I love that. Diversity, I think, is something I learned later on. For a while, I thought, well, cabbage is really healthy, so I'm going to have it for lunch every day, you know, and I was eating it all the time. And I was talking with a nutritionist who I used to work with when I was practicing clinically. So you've got to diversify. You've got to like switch out those greens. And I was like, you're right, you know? And I think that was a learning curve for me, because I was thinking, well, I'm eating the healthy foods, but I was eating the same healthy foods. So now it's more for me about trying to switch it up. I was a bit of a creature of habit at that point. But do you have a list? This is going to be a hard question, but I'm sure you've gotten this one. Do you have like a top five eat more of these foods list? Understanding there are no real superfoods, like, you know, the marketing companies will frame them as, but anything that you would say, eat more of these five foods.
Sure. No, I mean, so one of the things that I put in my book is a table of more than 200 foods that have all been supported by research and science that activate one or more of your body's health defense systems. So those are all good. And that's the great news, is that if you looked at this list of 200 foods and I gave you a Sharpie and I said, circle the ones that you already like, and you'd probably circle 10 or 20 or 30 of them, then you already know that the stuff you like is already healthy for you. You can kind of go there. And I think everybody's going to have their own, you know, preferred favorite foods that are healthy. At least that's kind of my approach to things. But I think you're asking me, so, you know, what are top five that I would recommend because I like them? Well, I can, and also my knowledge about the science. I'll tell you, I love green tea. Green tea has natural catechins, which are polyphenols, that can activate all five of your body's health defenses. It actually helps your circulation, helps your stem cells, good for your gut. There's actually, it's a prebiotic. Tea polyphenols are actually a prebiotic. Your gut bacteria loves to kind of, it's like fish food for them. They love it. It neutralizes oxidative stress for your DNA, slows down cellular aging, and it boosts your immunity. There was a study at the beginning of this pandemic out of China that looked at 900 people, and they were interested in figuring out 900 healthy people who was going to wind up developing COVID. And they found it was a half of people who developed COVID, other half didn't. They looked in their blood. People who didn't had a stronger antiviral defense system in their bloodstream called interferon gamma. They looked in their guts to figure out what their gut microbiota looked like, and they found a couple of organisms that were supportive of this natural virus killer, the interferon gamma, two bacteria, two strains, lactobacillus and ruminococcus. And then they looked at the food frequency questionnaire to figure out what these people were eating or drinking. And they found that those people who had more virus killer, natural virus killer in the bloodstream, who had better microbiome that was linked to that, were also having green or black tea or eating seafood. And so, again, there's sort of even the relevance to today's world is that tea is good for you for lots of different reasons. I love tomatoes. Tomatoes contain lycopene. Lycopene are a great antioxidant. And also, lycopene has been shown to actually lower the risk in human subjects of prostate cancer by about 29-30%. And also about for breast cancer, about 25% as well. And the interesting thing about lycopene is that lycopene in a raw tomato is in a chemical form our bodies have a hard time absorbing. In fact, if you pick a tomato off a vine and eat it like an apple, tastes great source of vitamin C, 90% of that or 80% of the lycopene is going to go through you because you only absorb about 20% of it. But if you heat that tomato and simmer it like with olive oil, you'll change the chemical structure into a form your body loves to absorb. And that's why cooked tomatoes for lycopene are better than raw tomatoes. And so what I love about my work on food is sort of this idea that you can convert this knowledge of the science into something that everybody can do in a healthy way. I love blueberries, great for the immune system. I love tree nuts, walnuts, pecans, almonds, pistachios, cashews, macadamia, pine nuts, you know, that diversity, the prebiotic fiber, the healthy oils, the healthy fats, great for you. I love olives. Another great source of a healthy fat, which is extra virgin olive oil. But most people don't know that the hydroxytyrosol found in olive juice, a little bit's found in the oil, a little bit, but most of it's in the juice. And when you press an olive to get the olive oil, most of that juice is just thrown away by the olive oil packers. And so now people are harvesting that olive water, which is packed with hydroxytyrosol. It's a super anti-inflammatory substance, and it's good for immunity as well. And let me think about one more that's actually a favorite of mine, are kiwis.
Ooh, I used to love those as a kid. I don't eat them as much anymore, though.
They're a fruit that's not too sweet, so it doesn't have too much fruit-based sugar. It's got fructose. It's fine. A lot of fiber, which is a great prebiotic. Great source of vitamin C, which is an antioxidant. And it's just a great, easy way. I like to find foods that are easy to incorporate in the life. If you think about it, tea, tomatoes, blueberries, nuts, kiwis, those are kind of almost no-brainers for me.
That was a wonderful list. I love green tea too. And, you know, it has L-theanine in it, which is something that I love because that's like calm attentiveness without necessarily the jitteriness. You can kind of counter the caffeine. So that's a great list. And I think, you know, the nuts, it's on my list too. I would love to hear, what do you think about like butters and oils? I get this question a lot. There's a lot of different stuff out there. I'm a big fan of olive oil. I also use a lot of avocado oil for high heat cooking. I personally don't use butter. I know some people are proponents of butter, other people are not. So I'd be curious what your thoughts are. And in coconut oil, that's another one. It's like a little controversial. What do you think about those?
So here's my thought about oils. I mean, I think that oils are fat, and too much of any kind of fat isn't good for us. So let's just start right then and there. Okay. So you want to choose and use the amount of fat in our diet in kind of a rational, moderate sort of way. So if you had to choose a healthier fat, I think olive oil is a good choice. But again, not too much. You can actually have way too much olive oil. Same thing as avocado oil. Those are great choices. The alternative is really to look at saturated fats like butter. I don't even put onto the grid, you know, the trans fats or anything else. Like there are some bad fats. But one of the big questions is about dairy and about butter. And, you know, there's a lot of culinary traditions that use butter for cooking. And I think that small amounts of saturated fats are probably fine. If you spend most of your time grooming and keeping your cardiovascular disease healthy, keeping your gut healthy, which helps your body metabolize lipids, having a little bit of butter is probably better than having margarine or any of these other types of fats. Butter tastes pretty good too. I mean, I think the jury is still out on what are the health consequences of having butter in modest fashion. Back in the 70s, you know, butter kind of got this big black eye. You know, it's harmful. It's going to raise your cholesterol. I don't think it's as bad as everyone thinks it is, or that, you know, I was taught in medical school or most doctors believe. But I do think that, you know, cutting down on saturated fats overall is really good. I could kind of throw butter into that sort of, you got other choices. If you really wanted to have some of it for the flavor, I think that's okay. But you have to be careful because it's not the healthiest choice you can make. And I sort of put it in the sort of the general category of like red meat, got a lot of saturated fat, not a great choice, but every now and then people who do eat meat will really, really covet a piece of beef. And that's okay if that's your choice. But what I want people to focus on in my world is just try to focus on the things that you know are good for you. Make those things your no-brainers, your instinctive choices.
Yeah, that's great advice. And I want to ask you one more nutrition question, and then I hope you can give everyone some insight into the Angiogenesis Foundation, which is such a wonderful cause. What about gluten? This is a big one. There's so many differing opinions about gluten. I would love to know how you feel personally about gluten.
Yeah. So, you know, this is a big area of confusion, I think, and it's still an area of active research. There's a lot of information out there that's popular about gluten as sort of a bad guy and causing inflammation. And there are gluten intolerances for sure. The true gluten as a villain is really not that gluten's a villain, but that there are conditions like celiac where your body actually reacts to gluten, and as a side reaction to the gluten actually causes an autoimmune destructive process against your own gut, which can be really, really damaging. And that's celiac disease. But celiac disease is actually a rather uncommon disease in the general population. There's no way that people who are, that there are as many celiacs or there are people who say that they can't stand gluten. And so I think gluten intolerance is probably more common. And if you are eating things with gluten and you're not feeling good with it, like that's a good reason to cut it down or cut it out. However, what was actually found in this sort of anti-gluten trend? And, you know, I always try to preface this by saying, anytime any specific food is singled out as either a hero or a villain, take a step back and take a breath. There's no way it's going to be black and white. Try to look at your sources and try to think a little bit more about what the research and what the data actually shows. But it turned out that a lot of foods that contain gluten are ultra-processed foods. And a lot of ultra-processed foods have a ton of other additives and other ingredients that people were actually intolerant to. And so gluten got kind of nabbed along the way as kind of like a companion bad guy. And so, you know, the general feeling is that, as I say, kind of go with your gut.
Yeah.
I think that's an important thing. If you're not able to tolerate foods with gluten, try cutting it out, but be really careful just not to jump onto a bandwagon and cut out some foods that, you know, like you don't necessarily need to simply because other people are telling you to.
Yeah, no, that's really, really well said. I was always a proponent of an elimination diet. If someone wasn't sure, you know, get off of it for a few weeks and see how you feel. And if you reintroduce it, pay attention to how you're feeling. So I think that, you know, those are options for people who have that uncertainty, and talking to your healthcare provider about recommendations specific to you. Now, I would love for you to share about the Angiogenesis Foundation. You're doing incredible work. Can you just give a little bit of insight into that and how can people find it, donate if they want to contribute?
Yeah, well, listen, thank you for asking. The Angiogenesis Foundation is a nonprofit organization. It's a 501c3. It's based in Cambridge, Massachusetts, but it does work all around the world. And the reason that I helped to start this organization is because I felt that medicine was moving way too slowly and compared to the science that's out there. We have like a fire hose, a fountain of science that's coming up, but really the changes in practice are like a tortoise, you know, just not moving very quickly. And so I thought, let's create an organization that could really speed up progress in ways that make a difference for people. And how can we use science really on our side to get that progress to be going? We wanted to help as many people as possible. So the approach was, how can you find a common denominator of disease, right? So if you found one thing that links a lot of different diseases and you work on how to treat that one thing, then all of a sudden you can scale this out and have a much bigger impact. So we found that angiogenesis, or how the body grows blood vessels, is that common denominator. Blood vessels are a 60,000-mile network of in our body. They bring oxygen and nutrients to every single healthy cell. But some diseases actually will hijack that blood supply and cause blood vessels to grow out of control, like cancer, like vision loss, like arthritis, and those extra blood vessels will destroy your joints, or endometriosis. All these things are characterized by the common feature of blood vessels out of control. Now, there are some other diseases where you don't have enough blood vessels and you have get into trouble as well, like cardiovascular disease or heart disease or after a stroke or Alzheimer's. We're not getting enough blood supply to the brain or to the heart and or to neuropathies. And now you're actually your tissues are actually dying. And so how do we actually manage our body's blood vessels so that we have just the right amount? I call it the Goldilocks zone. You remember Goldilocks is not too hot, not too cold, not too hard, not too soft, not too many, not too few. And that's really where we want to be with our blood vessels. How do we get just the right number of blood vessels? And so we started 25 years ago in 1994, really trying to figure out, you know, what can we do to treat cancer by cutting off the blood supply, prevent blindness by stopping extra blood vessels from growing in the eye, calm down inflammation, so prevent blood vessels from destroying joints and arthritis. Could we actually right-size blood vessels in the brain so you can actually have enough blood supply after a stroke or prevent heart attack or to heal a wound? So the great news is that over 25 years, we've actually been at the center of 34 FDA-approved new treatments for cancer, diabetes, and vision loss. And we're just getting started. So it's kind of like a 25 years of a starting point, but man, it's been like a thrill ride to see how we can actually make change happen. About 10 years ago, we actually got into food because we realized that foods can cut off the blood supply and starve cancers as well. And so I gave a TED talk called Can We Eat to Starve Cancer that's been really popular. But anybody who can learn more about our work by coming to our website at www.angio.org, that's www.angio.org. And you can read all about all the programs we're doing. Now we're really trying to tackle a big problem that's coming ahead, which is COVID, because look, most people don't die of COVID. Most people recover from COVID, and that's a good thing. And some people that recover, somewhere from 10 to 70%, maybe even more, wind up getting these long-term symptoms that we call long hauler syndrome. And it seems like blood vessels are kind of have gone wrong there too. So we're trying to figure out how can we diagnose, how can we treat, how can we reverse, what can we eat as well to help get our blood vessels back into health? And what can we eat to, by the way, to also just prevent infection? Because this is not the first pandemic we're going to face. There's going to be another one. And is there something that we can do that could be involve our kitchen, our pantry, our stovetop, our refrigerator? I mean, think about it. During the pandemic, what's the one thing that every human on the planet did? They went back to their home kitchen. right? Mm-hmm. And they got reacquainted with it. And I think there's a huge opportunity to do that as well. And by the way, I'm actually teaching a course through an online course through that's coming out of my book called Eat to Beat Disease. It's an Eat to Beat Disease course that you can go to my own website, drwilliamlee.com, drwilliamlee.com. And you can also follow me on social. But one of the things I'm trying to do is to bring people up to speed, give people practical information that they can actually take back to their kitchens and translate into their own lives, because it's not hard to eat to beat disease. All it takes is mindfulness.
I love it. Well, this has been an absolute pleasure. You are doing such incredible work, making such a positive impact on so many people's lives. So thank you for all that you do. Thank you for coming on. Everybody, check out his TED Talk, check out his book, check out his website, check out his course. And thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Crystal.
It was wonderful spending time with you today. Just one quick ask. This information is incredibly important to more than just you. So think of just one person today that you can share this episode with, and together we can spread this message that you don't have to sacrifice your well-being to attain success to others who need it. Valuable episodes like this one are published weekly, so you and others can have the benefit of reaching your ultimate potential. So click the share button, get this episode into the hands of just one person you know who would gain great value from it. I will see you next week.